Thanks for listening to the best of the Odd Couple podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern, 4 to 7 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Odd Couple at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
You're listening to the best of the Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker.
And we got to talk about a guy that I really admire, not only as a player, but as a person. And it's not going to be easy to bring the truth, but he admitted it last night. So we're going to have to talk about that, of course, and that being Clayton Kershaw.
No doubt.
What'd you think about, let me ask you this quickly before, because just want a quick answer.
Yep.
There were fans, and LZ Granderson, our former colleague at ESPN, put this on video on social media. There were fans riding over Clayton Kershaw jerseys. Not burning them, but driving over. LZ was actually one of them. I didn't like that.
Yeah, there's a degree of disrespect. And it's not like he's trying to lose. You know
right.
what I mean?
It's not like a guy leaving. Like LeBron, I didn't really like the burning of jerseys either. But you know what I mean?
But like, you get it. LeBron right left Cleveland. Like I'm too good to be here. Right. I don't want to be here.
Or whatever.
I'm leaving you behind.
You just want to leave. Whatever the reason.
I want to leave. And I think I could see where people get hurt by that. But in this case, he went out there to try to do what he could. He's just not that good anymore. I mean, we just have to face that.
Well, you gave him a little love in that statement by saying anymore.
Because that's not what the
narrative is not, oh, he's old, he doesn't have it. You know what the narrative is. It's that he's never had it in the postseason. Well, and that's what we're going to discuss.
We will do that. All right, let's welcome in Chris, the Odd Couple crew. Wouldn't be able to do this fine radio program without him. Gavin, of course, is our producer, filling in for Rob G. Paternity leave continues. I think by the time he comes back, the baby will be 4 years old, right?
I wondered if he was the one that gave birth.
I know.
Mean, he was kind of heavy, so.
But not that heavy.
Always plump, I mean.
Wow.
Husky.
I hope he's listening
husky.
Tonight.
I thought he was just husky, wow. But apparently he was pregnant, so.
Oh, stop it. Alex, of course, is our engineer. David Gascon's at the anchor desk. He'll keep us updated throughout the program. Mike is our intern. And Elijah is our social media guru. So they're all on the other side of the glass on this TV theme song Thursday.
That's right.
Let's kick some ass. All right, Chris, let's do it. And don't forget the Astros and Tampa Bay is about to start right now as we talk.
Yes, yes. Well, look, Rob, you and I texted this with you and I was texting with somebody else who was actually at the game. I'm not going to say who.
Right.
And when the Nationals tied it up in the eighth inning, I text to you one word, and I did the same thing with my friend who was at the game. Kershaw.
Yes.
That's all you had to say. Kershaw. And as much as it's a team sport, particularly baseball, where you can be a great pitcher, and if you get no hitting, you ain't gonna win. Or you can be a great hitter, and if you don't get help in the lineup or no pitching, you're not going to win. But this is about as much as you can blame it on one player as it gets. And I know he didn't give up the winning run. But emotionally, spiritually, mentally, I felt there was no way the Dodgers could bounce back from giving up that lead in the eighth inning. And the way it happened,
their spirit
to
was
their
taken.
Most respected guy, right? Their best, you know, historically their best player. I was hoping so because I like Kershaw, and obviously I even picked the Dodgers to get to the World Series. But I just was like, it's not going to happen. As you said, they were done after that. And the fact is, and I know a lot of people are putting it on Dave Roberts, and again, we're going to get to him, but I hate to say it, but this goes on Clayton Kershaw. Period. Period. He gave up two homers in two pitches.
And the one to Soto that tied the game, Chris, that was a monster blast.
He knew it was out.
He knew it.
As soon as he... The bat hit the ball. You saw Clayshaw just kind of
drop to his
Kershaw just fell to his knees.
Yep, he knew it. He did.
So the question some people are asking, and Clayton Kershaw is an all-time great regular season pitcher. He is a first ballot Hall of Famer. You're a voter. I think he's a first ballot Hall of Famer.
He is. Okay. Chris, he is the greatest pitcher of this generation.
Okay.
I mean, they're regular season.
You say that confidently.
No, regular season, bar none. He won three Cy Youngs. You could just look at all the awards, all the numbers. They're unbelievable. They're
been
unbelievable.
An MVP.
Yes, that's how good he is. He was.
But, and again, I think you're giving him some. Now, obviously, he's not what he used to be, but here's the problem. He's never been, I know he's had a moment here or there, but he's never been good in the postseason. Not even close to what he's been in the regular season. Here are a few things. His ERA in his regular season career, 2.44.
Which is stellar. That's stellar.
2.44. I don't know where that ranks. But that's great. 2.44 over 12 years. Even this year, you keep saying he doesn't have it. He was 3.03. But here's the deal. It's his first year outside of his rookie year when he was over or even at 3.
Right. He won 16 games this year, didn't he?
Yeah, 16-5.
Yeah. Most people would die to have a 16-5.
In today's era, that's like going 29-2.
Right.
Back in the
day. I mean, that's unbelievable.
And he gave up, as I said last night, homers on back-to-back pitches. He's never done that in the regular season in his entire career.
You just said 12 years. Never.
Never.
Chris, never.
And yet he's done it twice, Rob, in the playoffs. So what I'm saying is all of this shows that he is not nearly, he is just not the same pitcher in the playoffs. He's 9-11. Overall in the playoffs, and he's 169-74 in the regular season. That's a six almost 70% winning percentage versus 45% in the playoffs. And as I was thinking about, Gavin threw this question at us: is he the biggest choker in sports history, American sports? I can't think of anybody I'd put ahead of him.
Wow.
Can you? I want to, but can you, people mention James Harden in the NBA. James Harden, yeah, he's had some bad games. 10 points against San Antonio, 12 turnovers against the Warriors. But he's also had some huge games in big, last year. And now, granted, you can hold it against him that they lost to Golden State in, even without Kevin Durant, but he put up 35. He's had big, huge games in key moments as well. Who else would you say? People, Patrick Ewing missed the layup against Indiana in the 95 playoffs, but that was one game.
That's one game. I'm hard to say.
No, I can't even. Right. I can't even put him in the same sense. Can you give me one? Because, again, I like Kershaw as a man and a player, pitcher, obviously, but can you give me somebody? Peyton Manning, what was he, 9-11 at one point in the playoffs? But he won two Super Bowls. And even if you take the last one, he was a shell of himself, but he at least had won one before that.
How come I can't remember the golfer's name from Australia? The shark.
Was that Norman?
Greg Norman.
Greg Norman?
Greg Norman. You know how many times he choked, Chris, and big?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? I'd have to look it up to give you the exact. Greg Norman is the first guy that comes to mind when I think of ready to wrap up a tournament and misses a putt, or you know what I mean?
That's a good one.
Greg Norman is up there. Do you count Jim Kelly? Four straight Super Bowl losses? I'm just asking.
I don't remember offhand how well he played. Because I looked up some lists, and some lists just named a bunch of guys that hadn't won titles.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I don't think that.
That's not what we're talking about, chokers. I agree with you.
I'm going to look up Kelly's numbers, but off the top of my head, I don't think of him that way.
Right.
I want to see what he did in those Super Bowls.
Because it would be like you have a chance to get a touchdown and you throw a pick, you know what I mean, to seal the game or
right,
something to
right.
me. That's when I look at that, I think of somebody choking in a
like
big
what,
spot.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I doubt – I don't remember him doing it. So, you know, no, I don't think Kelly's in that spot. I mean, can you think of a baseball player that – you know, you
I think people. I think people looked at A-Rod like that until he had the 2009 postseason.
Right,
and you remember he had all the big home runs, tied all those games for the Yankees, and was huge. So that people don't use that against him anymore because he performed and he won a World Series. I don't know. This is a good question. We could throw it out and find out what people have and what they think, Chris, when we talk about that as the biggest chokers of all time.
Yeah, I'm looking for a name, but I can't come up with one.
You know what? As a coach, Marty Schottenheimer was that guy who always had these good teams, could never advance.
Yeah.
Marty.
Yeah. They couldn't even get to the big game.
Right. And at some point, and you know what? I've been saying it all along, too, Andy Reid. Andy Reid has had really good teams, but he hasn't been able to win the big one. He's been a coach for a long time. Andy Reid, I would say, is a choker. Would you say he didn't have good teams?
I wouldn't say a choker.
He's had good teams, and they should have won. He should have won a Super Bowl by now, Andy Reid.
First, I don't put coaches in this same category as players, and I know obviously they have a huge thing to a lot to do with the outcome, but it's on the players ultimately.
No, I get it,
and I think the thing that makes Kershaw such a maybe an outlier. I mean, we can't think of somebody right now that matches up with him. Is he so great?
Right.
It's like Peyton Manning. If Peyton Manning had no Super Bowls, and I'm not even holding the fact that Kershaw hadn't won a World Series against him, or, you know, I'm not holding that against him. But it'd be like if Manning had no Super Bowls and was absolutely horrible.
Right, considering how great of a quarterback
yes,
the guy
that's the
and
thing.
All the MVPs and all the numbers, right.
So if Kershaw wasn't so great in the regular season, and he said it last night, Gavin, I know you got a few quotes from him. Give us the one where he admitted that the postseason narrative is right at this point.
He can't run away from it.
No.
There's no way. I mean, he can't sit there with a straight face and be like, I don't know what people are talking about.
Right, nah. Right.
Thanks for listening to the Best of the Odd Couple podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern, 4 to 7 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for The Odd Couple at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
All right, Rob. While the Dodgers were playing the Nationals last night, the New Orleans Pelicans, who are now, and I mean this wholeheartedly, you may not feel this way, but it's a fact. It's truth. The New Orleans Pelicans, who are must-see TV. You disagree?
I think there's a curiosity factor. Just like you went out on the limb on the Browns, I think that they'll wind up.
I'm not
up,
saying they're going to be great. I can't imagine
they're going to wind
the playoffs
up. But,
in the tough
but
West.
It was the same thing. Why the NFL and the NFL networks all put the Browns on four national games? I agree with you. They will do that, but that doesn't mean it's going to be the end result that we think. I agree.
No,
I think people will want to see
it. We think the end result is that they're not going to make the playoffs.
Okay, yeah. I agree with that.
And you understand that, I mean, it's Zion. He's the reason they're on TV.
Right, I get it.
And you know that in those first few years, there's a honeymoon period. If he comes out and does work, 20 points a game or whatever, bunch of dunks, highlight dunks, and they're, you know, they win 35 games or whatever, that's going to be enough. Like, LeBron didn't make the playoffs his first 2 years. So nobody's going to hold it against him if they don't win.
No, and
but
especially
what he can do.
In the West. Where
right.
When you
in
look
the East,
at,
they completely make the playoffs.
When you look at the
would.
West, you just go, well, what spot, no. whose spot are they taking?
Right.
I'm just.
Totally right.
Am I right? There's just too many good teams.
I think the eight spots are set. Just off the top of my, I mean, I'm not in this order, but Clippers, Lakers, Warriors, Rockets, Jazz, Nuggets, Blazers, Spurs.
And basically all you're doing, Chris, is you dropped out OKC and you added the Lakers. That's what's
yep.
happening. Am I right?
Yep. Yep. That's it. So I think they're set.
Now,
I
mean, maybe if the Lakers don't make it, then maybe they might be able to slide in.
Look at you. It, you know, maybe an injury if LeBron gets hurt. That's the only way,
what
brother.
If AD gets hurt? I'm not.
Nah, LeBron will get him in.
Still get him in no
He's
matter
in
what.
He's in playoff mode.
Oh, okay. I remember that last year.
Just take it from, it's going to be different. A summer's worth of rest, a summer's worth of disrespect from the likes of you and others of your ilk. But
Chris,
anyway,
all right,
this
yeah,
was
please.
About Zion.
Here we
this
go.
Was about
no,
Zion.
This always
we'll
turns into LeBron.
LeBron.
Yeah.
We had plenty of times. Zion last night, Rob, 29 points, 12 of 13 shooting. I know it's preseason, but I'm just saying what I saw from him. First of all, especially, Robin, you know this because you covered the NBA.
Since 1987.
Right. There you go. And you covered it in the heyday of the brutal no layup NBA.
Yes.
Right? Where you went to the rim, you were getting hammered. And by the way, there were the greatest, it was the greatest era of big men ever.
Oh,
Shaq.
It was totally
Elijah
different.
Wan,
yes.
David Robinson, Ewing, Mourning. I mean, you know, like it was crazy. Now, who's a rim protector? Who do you fear when you go to the basket in the days NBA?
Nobody. They're all on a perimeter.
That's the thing. The floor is
wait
so
for
spread.
A loose ball.
It's easy to get to the cup, and it's not physical. So my point is he's going to be able to get to the basket, and he obviously has got hops, and he's got some moves with the ball around the rim. He's going to put up a lot of points because the game is so wide open now.
I don't disagree with that.
I think he's going to be good. Yeah.
I don't disagree at all. There's nobody else there unless it's too ridiculous and they decide that we need to body up or bring somebody in. You know what I mean? To make him earn
right.
it if it's just too easy.
But that
he has
might,
nights
and
like
there's
that.
There's very few teams that have guys like
no,
that. You
I
know what I mean?
But if you have nights like that, 12 out of 13?
12 for 13.
I mean,
because everything was essentially a layup or a dunk.
Exactly. And you can't make it that easy. If you do that, because when I saw the score, that's why I was even a little surprised. I didn't see the end of it. Obviously, I got caught
they,
up.
They were basically. Down.
They were down by 20.
Right.
I looked at the
As
score.
As he
was like,
scoring, they were losing.
Right, and I said, yeah. Oh, okay, well, he's having a big night, but I couldn't believe the score.
Yeah, they're going to be fun. Though. And obviously, Zion's the main draw, but I think Lonzo is a good place for him.
How did Lonzo finish up? Did you got numbers on him last night?
His numbers.
I'm just
yeah.
curious. In a big night,
he only played 19 minutes.
Okay,
he had 2 points, which not unusual for him. But he had 9 assists.
How many shots? Was he aggressive at
one
all?
One for
not?
Five.
Okay,
one for five. He was more aggressive. He didn't shoot a lot, obviously, but as far as just pushing the tempo and forcing action. But they got Drew Holiday, who's tough. Brandon Ingram. So they're going to be interesting. But again, the West is so tough. Remember, J.J. Redick went there too.
Thanks for listening to the best of the Odd Couple podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern, 4 to 7 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Odd Couple at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
All right, Rob, let's switch to the NBA. We've talked a lot of NBA this week, and most of it has had nothing to do with the games because of this situation that is still going on in China. Now, the Lakers and the Nets did play.
And the Nets beat them by
China
3.
China last night, right, which is irrelevant, obviously. But, you know, Kyrie got hurt his face again, which had been injured. He re-aggravated it, and he only played a minute. LeBron played half the game, AD half the game, you know, but the Nets did win. But anyway, it was announced as a sold-out crowd, 18,000, so good for them. And they went ahead and played the game. But China was like, look, no media availability.
Yes.
Players, coaches, nobody spoke.
It's just
and the NBA acquiesced. Now, you and I said yesterday, we said, that the NBA should jet. Like if China's treating you like that, tearing down the banners, the sponsors are pulling out of supporting the NBA in China, all of that, then get out.
Right. And you know, the media sessions, which is a part of the American game,
yep.
and the way we do business, I'm sorry, this is how we do it. we shouldn't have to acquiesce from that standpoint and change up. People have come as reporters, Chris. Companies have paid money for them to go cover this team. What do you mean we have no access? Right. I wish you would have told us that before we went.
Right.
And spent the money. Are you going to reimburse us? We can't do our jobs? We could have watched the game on TV.
Yes.
That's not right. That's not fair.
Well, but that's, you know, China, they're not worried about that. And the NBA bowed down at least yesterday. But you and I are not alone, Rob. A group of congressmen or congressional members of both genders sent a letter to the NBA, and they made four requests, but one of them being that they sent a letter to the NBA saying that they would like them to, urging them to suspend all activities in China until the country's boycott of the league and the Houston Rockets ends.
See?
And you had, check this out, though. You had Ted Cruz, who we know is a Republican on one side of the aisle, and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who you know is a Democrat on the other side of the aisle. And it was a bipartisan. They were there, the two extremes, but it was a group of Democratic and Republican lawmakers who signed this letter urging the NBA to do what you and I said they should do. Now, go ahead, and I'll make my comment.
I was going to say, because for all the differences that we do have, and we have a country that's divided, Chris, there's no other way of looking at it. We can't sugarcoat it.
Right.
What they're talking about are basic values that all, just about all Americans share. That's what we live by, right? The freedom to be able to, even if you don't like it. We talked about it before. Nobody can come and arrest you, Chris, if you're out on the road and you're burning an American flag. That's your right, right? Some people might not like it, but that's your right.
And criticize.
Yep, you can criticize the government. You can criticize the president. Criticize the Democratic Party. Criticize the Republican. Whatever you want to do.
Right.
Love is peaceful and you're not hurting anybody. You have a right.
Right. Right.
So I respect members of Congress for coming together and saying, hey, and I agree. It didn't say sever ties forever.
Right.
Suspend.
Right. I totally agree. I'm with you. Again, you and I said this yesterday, and they must have listened to the Odd
Couple.
They were
listening.
Because they got together and wrote this letter. But anyway, here's what I will say, though, is this, Rob. Don't be hypocritical about it, lawmakers, because the NBA is not the only American company doing business with China.
Right.
And I want you to hold all of the other companies, the Marriotts, the hotel chains, the retailers, the airlines, every other American company, hold Nike. Hold them to the same standard that you're expecting of the NBA. And in most cases, right, because I've been reading about this, you know, over the last week as it's become a big story.
Sure, yeah. Right.
And most American companies reportedly acquiesce to China.
Because of all the people and the potential of profits and money.
Yep.
That's what it is. They're not doing this to some third world countries where they can't make any. Do you know what I mean?
No doubt.
This is what it's all about. Doubt. You can say whatever it's about the money aspect, and they know they can make money off of, and they hope that
and
they
they're
can
putting bring, a, yes. And they often put aside. I'll give you a few examples. Last year, Marriott apologized for an employee who liked, you know what that is, liked a social media post about Tibet.
That was it,
which is under control of China. And they Marriott apologized for it and fired the employee. Now, it wasn't a big story because they don't have LeBron James working at Marriott.
Right.
Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant and all these great players. But I want you, Congress, I support your letter, but hold Marriott to the same standard.
I agree.
Hold Nike to the same standard. All the Adidas, Adidas is German, I believe. But all these other companies, don't just hold a bunch of basketball players and the front office executives and all those people running the league.
Chris, let me ask you this. This is just something, and I want to get your take on this. We didn't talk about this before the show, so if you need to think about it, I'm not trying to put you on the spot.
Right.
You know, often LeBron is talked about in a global sense. Can LeBron really be thought of as like a global icon when he won't say anything? Like where does he fit in? And he's a basketball player.
Right.
Which I understand, and, you know, I'm not asking him to solve world peace or anything like that. But LeBron's, you know, has done a lot of stuff and spoken out and a lot of good stuff, even just recently with the college kids, Chris.
Right.
And a lot of good stuff. But here he is very silent. And he's a guy who's out there, with his sneakers in China and all the other stuff. I think it's weird that LeBron has nothing to say about this.
Well, here's what I'll say. I think he's certainly a global icon because of his basketball ability. And I would call him a national icon, loved and hated both, but a national icon because of the things he's done off the court. The businesses, empowering his childhood friends to become powerful business moguls in their own right. The school in Akron, as you said, now this NCAA law. So I think as a basketball player, he's a global icon. As for his off the court stuff, he's a national icon. But he's not a global icon. And to be honest, and I'm like you, LeBron he didn't have to say anything. I don't hold it against him that he hasn't said anything. And that it doesn't take away from what he's done off the court, you know, all the great things he's done.
So I haven't said, right.
However, here's what I say, Rob, because early in LeBron's career, he made a comment where he said, I want to be a global icon like Muhammad Ali.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
that's why I'm asking you this question. There you go.
Well, here's what I'll say. I think LeBron missed an opportunity. An opportunity. Again, he didn't have to do it. But he missed an opportunity to become Ali. If LeBron had come out yesterday, 2 days ago, and said, you know what? I'm with Adam Silver. We have values in America. I don't like everything about the way our government's run, but I have the right to speak out against it. And I do. And I have. And the icons before me, particularly Muhammad Ali, spoke out. We had that freedom.
And if you remember how harshly
that's important, and I think if China does not want us here, we're not trying to tell you how to run your government, but if they don't want us here, if they're taking our banners down and they're canceling our events, we're trying to help Chinese citizens with NBA cares, then let's pack our bags and go home. Because freedom of speech is more important than whatever money we're going to make here. Now, I'm not saying he had to do it.
No, but
or he had a responsibility. That would make you Ali because, number one, Rob, that would cost money.
No, right.
That would cost LeBron money because I don't know how Nike would like that.
It would cost Nike money. It would be him saying that money is just not the end-all, be-all in all situations. It's just like we talked about with Ali. The greatest and all, Ali was a hated figure in this country.
Yes.
Hated.
And what you're saying, see, Ali made a sacrifice.
Yes.
And no one since then, I mean, Kaepernick made a sacrifice. Yep. I don't put him on Ali's level, but he made a sacrifice. But that's the difference. LeBron has done more business-wise than Ali. He's created more jobs than Ali. He's created more educational opportunities than Ali. But Ali made the ultimate sacrifice in sports. Because here's what people forget. Remember, Ali wouldn't go to fight in Vietnam or even represent the military in Vietnam. And so he was stripped of his title. And for 3 years, he was not able to fight. But people act like, he was sentenced to 3 years and then. No! When he was exiled from boxing, he had no idea whether or not he'd ever be able to fight again.
Right. He didn't know. He didn't know that it would work out and history would eventually to have him on the right side of history. He didn't.
He didn't know. And he was, like you said, he was hated by more than half the country.
Yes.
He gave up the dream he had had since he was 12 years old to be heavyweight champion of the world. He gave up all of that and didn't have much money, hardly any money.
This was the 60s.
Joe Frazier gave him some money. To help him out. And so that's the difference. And so, again, I'm not saying LeBron had to do anything because, you know, most of us aren't doing that.
No. I'm just asking that from the standpoint.
That was an opportunity because then he would have become a global icon because everyone would have said, this guy, he could have, and this might sound crazy, Rob, he could have become bigger than Ali because Ali fought for things in America. African-American people, you know? He fought for us. LeBron would be standing. This could have led to some people trying to make changes in China.
And see, here's the other thing, too. When I hear people saying that they don't know what the they're not so sure with what's going on, Chris, I just think that's a crock. It's pretty obvious. It's not that hard to find out. You know, when people want freedom and democracy, we know what that is. What part don't you understand about freedom and democracy? So to say that you don't know what's good, the issue is or whatever, I think that's so bogus. It's a communist country with a dictatorship. What part don't you get? And some of the issues in this country are more complex than that.
I agree. And I'm going to say this too, Rob. And I agree, you know, Adam Silver said, we understand different countries have different views and different political systems. And it's not our job to adjudicate how those work out. And he's right. I mean, you can't just go into another country and tell them how to do, hey, they should be doing
that.
That's
not the issue. Right. That's not what people are asking them to do.
Right. I'll say this. If as African American people, whether it was during slavery, which obviously was a while ago, or even segregation, if another country, say in the 1950s, had said, you know what? We don't like the way you treat your black citizens. We're not dealing with you.
No doubt, Chris.
We would love 100%. Them, even though they wouldn't, you know, you could say, oh, they shouldn't tell America how to do things, but right is right. And human beings are human beings.
No doubt.
No matter what nationality or race or country or whatever. And so we would want that. Especially if they had the same power as America or more. And we would be grateful. And so again, stuff could get messy. But these are things that are there on the table. And as you don't tell a nation how to run itself, I know those people who are oppressed and working in those sweatshops and all that, they would appreciate it, even if they don't have the freedom to say it right now. They may not even know what freedom, real freedom, is like. They would appreciate it if somebody outside stood up. And so that's the answer to your question, Rob.
Right.
I just think it was an opportunity. I'm not down on him because he didn't have to do it.
I was just saying I thought that was the opportunity. When you talk about global icon, that's all.
Right.
Yeah, there was a chance there.
That's why Ali's Ali.
Yep.
Ali wasn't a businessman and all that LeBron is, but that's why Ali is revered as the greatest.
I remember.
Because he made the ultimate sacrifice.
Was it, those people didn't do anything to me. Do you remember?
The Viet Cong never called me the N-word.
That's what he said.
Thanks for listening to the best of the Odd Couple podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern, 4 to 7 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Odd Couple at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
We love having him in. He's the Fox Sports NFL analyst. Also, you can hear him right here on Fox Sports Radio every Saturday from 4 to 8 p.m. Eastern, our man, Bucky Brooks. Bucky, what's happening, man?
What's up?
Hey, what's going on, fellas? How you doing?
Doing good.
We are great. Let's start here, Bucky. Colin Kaepernick, I'm sure you've seen the letter now. I would think his agent sent out a letter trying to clarify, you know, what he called false information that's been out there about Kaepernick, saying he hasn't been offered a job by a team, he hasn't had a trial for a team, he still wants to play in the NFL, and so on and so forth. What did you make of the letter, and what do you make of the situation? Or is it just, you know, we know what the situation is. He's never getting back in the league, and that's that. Talk to us about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the situation is very, very plain to see. Like, he's not going to get back. For whatever reason, like some would call it blackballing or whatever, he's not going to get an opportunity. And I think it's pretty clear as to why he won't get that opportunity, because if you look at his resume, say what you want to about how it may have finished up and Blaine Gabbert starting and then he taking the starting job back. We've seen lesser players have multiple opportunities to continue to play in a backup capacity that haven't accomplished as much as Colin. And so it's just one of those situations where we know what it is. It's going to continue to be that, because I don't think you're going to find a general manager or a team that is courageous enough to potentially deal with whatever backlash may come from signing a guy who has led a team to a Super Bowl.
Bucky, Chris and I are on this too. Shame on the players. This thing could have been solved a long time ago if the players as a union, as a whole, were willing to make a statement to the owners that this is not right. It goes against everything that you were to believe in football, Bucky, which is it's an equal playing field and the best players get to play. That's why the country's 80% white and the NFL's 80% black. Not because they like black people, because on an equal playing field, the best people get to play. Why is the union okay with this, and why haven't they ever want to stand up to do just what's right? They don't want to give him a job just to give him a job, but he should have had an opportunity to earn a job.
Yeah, he should have had an opportunity to earn a job. I mean, like, when we look at this, I mean, Paxton Lynch has had multiple opportunities to try and earn a job in the league. He was the first-round pick. He hasn't done nearly as much as Colin Kaepernick. And look, the list goes on and on and on. I think what you have, though, is I don't know if you can make a team sign him. Like, that's ultimately
right. You can't.
Where you stuck. Like, you don't have.
Although what we were saying, Bucky, is the players. If the player said, look, we're gonna kneel for the national anthem until Kaepernick's on the roster.
You can't tell me right.
We're not even playing. I mean, I know that's radical, but he would be in the league tomorrow.
I mean, yeah, but like, I mean, look, man, we've seen this, and this is no knock on players. I don't know how strongly the entire brotherhood feels about Colin Kaepernick, his stance on issues, and if they could be in solidarity to get him back into the league. And so I think it's tough when you have 1,800 players to try and get them on the same page when it comes to dealing with Colin Kaepernick. And I think it's even tougher when you are trying to force ownership, where 31 of the 32 owners are white and the only minority that you have in an ownership role is Shad Khan, to get them to understand the importance of diversity and all that. And let's be honest, the President of the United States really took this to another level
right.
when he got involved. And so with his base being one that can be fired up and the like, it is just tough for owners to deal with the potential backlash that could come from doing something that may go against the interest of some of the guys who will pay for the tickets to fill the seats in the stands.
Yeah, but if you don't have players, you don't even have a league, and you want to hurt somebody, it's financially. We can get into that. We would need like 4 days.
We need
to talk
show.
About. But I was just curious about that because, you know, it comes in numbers and strength. And the union, that's why guys don't have guaranteed contracts. You have the worst retirement package. You got everything. And the league makes the most money, which is the shame of it all. But anyway, Giants, Patriots, when you look at the Patriots defense, which is unbelievable, to giving up less than a touchdown a game. What is it, 6.5 points, Bucky, something like that. Can you really look at that defense and say, wow, this is an unbelievable defense, this is like the 85 Bears, or do you have to look at your opponents and the opponents that they've played and say most of it has to do with that they haven't played anybody?
I mean, yeah, I think you certainly can make the case that they haven't played the top teams, and that's a fair argument. They haven't played an elite team. They haven't played elite quarterbacks. They've been able to kind of dominate the guys that they've played. I will say this, though, in making the basketball reference, they're able to do it without stars. And so if you think about the Pistons, not the Bad Boy Pistons, but the
2004,
Ben Wallace Pistons, where the collective of the group exceeds the individual players. And I think what they do is they play great team defense. The scheme, the way they play, the way the pieces of the puzzle fit. I don't know if you look at the Patriots roster and say, man, I would love to have any one of those individual defenders. But if you put all 11 guys in that system with Bill Belichick kind of making the calls, it works for them. And so they're the epitome of what team defense is in the National Football League. They just kind of understand how to play to the strengths of their individual and collective talents, which is why they're such a tough team to deal with the opening part of the season.
Bucky, I want to go to Cleveland with you. And Baker Mayfield's getting a lot of criticism, and rightly so. But I'm looking at OBJ, and obviously he's a great talent. But I'm looking at, you know, he had the fumble last game on the punt return. He dropped a pass that game. Every once in a while, I'll drop a pass. Is it fair to say he's a great talent, but not a great football player?
Hey, come on now. No, you can't say that. I think what he did in the league the first 3 years is unprecedented. The amount of numbers that he put up, the touchdowns, the consecutive 1,000-yard seasons. Look, he is an unbelievable player. I think here's the issue that you have in Cleveland when you bring in an OBJ. The way that Cleveland needs to play with Baker Mayfield, they may not be able to fully max out Odell Beckham Jr. Baker Mayfield is an undersized quarterback. He's not an elite athlete. So to play with an undersized quarterback like that, you really need to get under center and play old-school football. Run it, play action, and then throw off play action with two guys on the field, Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham. So Odell Beckham would never necessarily ring up the numbers that we grew accustomed to seeing him ring up in New York in this Cleveland situation, but he certainly can continue to be the impact player. And I still believe he is arguably the best wide receiver in the league when you look at his skill set and what he is able to do when he gets those opportunities.
Speaking of undersized players, you were big on Kyler Murray. Tell me about him. Is he progressing? Is he doing things that you were expecting? Is he not? Is it because of the offensive line, the play calling? You know, Cliff Kingsbury was supposed to revolutionize the offensive football. What's going on in Arizona?
I think what you have in Arizona, man, you got rookies all over the place. So you got a rookie quarterback and a rookie head coach slash play caller. And so Cliff Kingsbury is acclimated to the league, trying to figure out how it works. Pro football is so different than college football because the hashes play a big part of your success in college, where it's not as big because the ball is in the middle of the field primarily in the pros. Kyler Murray, I think, is progressing well, but I think he is facing the challenges that undersized quarterbacks will face. Some of the big guys in his face running around trying to get used to the speed of the game. But I think he's coming along well. I think it's easy and apparent that he does have, like, number one elite-level talent, arm strength, athleticism. But until they get a supporting cast around him that really allows him to showcase his talents, I think we always will wonder what is this going to look like at the end of the deal. So we just got to wait and see. They got to get my offensive line. They got to continue to surround him with playmakers on the outside. When they do that, though, I think he's going to be a really good player because he's always been a really good player.
Bucky, great stuff as
yes,
always,
appreciate
man. We
it.
Appreciate the time.
And we didn't
knowledge.
Have one fight this time, so Bucky, you could come on again, all right?
All right, man. Y'all be good.
All right.
All right, brother. Peace.
Thanks for listening to the Best of the Odd Couple podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern, 4 to 7 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for The Odd Couple at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
The National League kingpin, franchise record 106 wins, franchise record for home runs in a season, the Los Angeles Dodgers bounced last night in the divisional round by the Washington Nationals. And right now you got the Houston Astros up 4-1 in the top of the sixth against the Tampa Bay Rays in a do-or-die game.
Yeah, and I was going to say, I think the Dodgers also set a record for most home wins during the regular season. I mean, it was a record-breaking year for them,
yep. And
it's all for naught. And I give Tampa, they gave up four runs. They're still in the game. They still have three at-bats. Three innings and two-thirds of an inning. So they still got a ways to go before it's all over.
No, they're in the game.
Yeah, they're in the game.
We learned that last night.
Yeah,
it was 3-1, but
exactly.
Not 4-1, but still. All right, so Rob, we talked about Kershaw earlier and his just unprecedented struggles in the postseason.
Struggling.
And that we didn't talk about Dave Roberts, the manager for the Los Angeles Dodgers. And the question really is, there, a lot of people criticized him for the job he did last night. First, I want to get your view, but I do want to say this too. I don't know if Dave Roberts is to blame for the pitching errors, if you will. Like people said, okay, you should have taken Kershaw out after he struck out Adam Eaton at the bottom of the seventh.
Right.
You shouldn't have let him start the eighth. Well, you should have went to Maeda.
Maeda, right.
Yeah,
right.
Was that Roberts' decision?
Well, I mean, that's a good point because...
Or was it the front office just telling him what to do?
And that's where people don't know. They claim, he's been asked before, Chris, once the game starts, the Dodgers have said he's making the decisions. I'm not so sure about that. It seems like a lot of it is already scripted. And even when Roberts said that Kershaw, even before the game was started, that he would come in. Like, you know what? Without knowing what the circumstances of the game was going to be. Right? Why was Kershaw automatically going to be the second pitcher after Buehler? I don't understand that. Why?
That's what I wonder. Like you know, here's a couple things. One, he would have been your game one starter in the championship series.
Right.
So why automatically pitch him? To your point, if I don't need to go to him, why go to him? Or after he struck out Eaton at the end of seven, and I know he didn't throw a lot of pitches
anyway.
He
threw three pitches and struck him out, but that was the left-handed guy they needed him to get out.
You could have taken him out there.
And this is what I heard from which I did not know, and I don't know if you read it anywhere, but that was the first time the Dodgers have ever pitched him like you pitched a third of an inning, right?
Right.
He sat down and then came back out to start an inning. It's always been, Chris.
Really?
Yes, that he's come in and closed out the game. Do you know what I mean? Where you come in
and
you
get the bullpen appearances.
He's never sat an inning and come back out ever until last night. So you got to ask yourself, why are you doing that? And why are you putting him in that spot? And here's the other thing: why I'm down on Dave Roberts. And
so are down on him.
I am. What are you doing with Kenley Jansen? Right. Your closer, Chris, it put him in to mop up the game after the game was over.
Right.
He has to start the ninth inning. And if he can't start the ninth inning for you, guess what? He shouldn't be on the roster. Why do you have
but
him?
But don't you think in the ninth inning it was tied?
No, but you got it. You know what? You always.
Or no, they were down. They were down.
No, it was tied.
It was essentially.
It was 3-3.
No, you're right. That's right. You're right. It was tied.
You so pitch your
I'm
closer.
Sure Roberts may have been thinking, no, this could go 11. Who knows how long this could go?
Can't do it. This is how you'd play it. You got to pitch your closer. And your idea, Chris, is this. We're going to hold him in the ninth, and then we'll try to win it in the bottom of the ninth. The last thing you want to do, and this happened to Buck Showalter in the playoffs, where he didn't pitch his best closer pitcher, didn't get in the game. Because you can't assume there's going to be 11 or 12th inning, and I'm going to wait until we get a run to close it out. You're batting last. Do you see what I'm saying?
Right.
So you can't hold them. You got to stop them from scoring, and then you got to get your team out there.
Here's the other thing, though. People have been down on Jansen this year.
No, I get it.
If Jansen goes out there, and let's say he lost the game.
He shouldn't be on the
run. You don't think Roberts would have gotten killed for that?
But he's the all-time, he's the closer. He's had a lot of success. I agree he's not the same guy.
And I'm not saying. You agree Roberts would have got killed?
You had to put, I mean, if that's your guy, then you should have made a change before. Because you put in Joe Kelly. Again, why is Joe Kelly in the ninth inning?
Right.
When he pitched the eighth inning.
And why did he pitch the 10th?
Right. Right, the ninth and the 10th. I'm sorry. Why is he pitching the 10th? He got out of the ninth.
Right.
Okay, now you let him, and then he gave up the hits, and he still was out there. And you let him get the bases loaded, and he still was out there, Chris, until the grand slam came.
To serve up the ball.
Do you see what I'm saying? Like, once he gave up a hit, You could have said, all right, I got to bring in Jansen.
Once the bases were loaded, Rob, it was over. Were there any outs or was it one out?
No outs. There were no outs.
It was over.
So why wasn't Jansen at that point then brought in to try to get a strikeout and a pop-up, Chris, to try to get out of it? It was clear that Kelly didn't have it.
All right, this is the question. And most people I've heard on this subject today have said no is their answer. But I'm asking you, it sounds like you might differ. Should Dave Roberts be fired?
Dave Roberts should be fired from this standpoint. And you got to, I don't know, maybe he's covering up for the front office, Chris. Maybe they are managing everything. And if you sign off on that, you're going to have to live with it because people don't know that. And you know what they're going to do? They look at it as you're the manager. You're ultimately.
You're going to get the credit.
You're going to get the blame. Right. If they would have won and win the World Series, Dave Roberts gets the credit, doesn't he?
Right.
So you can't tell me after the fact when things go bad. Oh, no, that's not Dave Roberts, because that's not what you would say if they won the game and Dave Roberts made a move. So I think when you look at the way he handled the bullpen, I just didn't like it. I thought he made mistakes. And once you put people in the right spots, Chris, and they fail, there's nothing you could do as a manager. You just have to be able to make the right moves. And then if a guy gives up a home run, there's nothing you could do, but the right guy was in at the time. That's all.
I'm going to agree with you that he should be fired. Now, where I disagree with you, I don't think he deserves to be fired.
Okay.
I think he's a very good, if not a better than that, if not an excellent manager. Like, he's done a great job with that team. There's no doubt about it. I've been there 4 years, two trips to the World Series. Best regular season record of all time. Done a great job. However, this is not about does he deserve it or is he not good enough? Because he doesn't deserve it and he is good enough. It's about you got to do something different. You've got to. There are times when you just need a different voice. Mark Jackson didn't deserve to be fired in Golden State.
Yep, that's a good example.
Right? I mean, but Pat Riley, when he walked away from Showtime Lakers, he said, look, they need another voice. They just need another. You can't bring this team back as it is.
You can't. I don't care all
and
the success.
And nothing changes. Right.
And you know what? I think the fans let you know that last night when they got up and started walking out, Chris, en masse.
Because
those are diehard
thing,
Dodger
Rob,
fans.
If you go through say you bring it back as you are, and you go through the whole 162, and you win 104 games, and you got the best record in the National League again, and it means nothing. The fans aren't going to be excited about it. The players may not even be that hyped. Like, the only thing you can do differently is you got to prove it in the postseason. But if you make a change, if you got a new manager, I'm not saying you got to revamp the roster because the roster's fine.
Right.
I mean, you know, tweaks here and there. But if you have a different manager and you go through the regular season and you play well, people will feel like, okay, we're different now. It's not going to be the same thing. We're not going to blow it somehow. And again, it's not, I disagree with you. I don't think it's Dave Roberts' fault. I think he, you know, if Kershaw pitches well, we're not, you know, it's on the players, I think.
No,
and
but
he went with great pitchers. I mean, and again, Jansen could have easily given up a home run.
There's no doubt about it. And I'm not, but if you, Chris, if you have no confidence in your closer, he shouldn't be on the roster, is what I'm saying. Is that they needed, that's what they didn't do, and that's where you can blame the front office, that they didn't fix the bullpen. I said it, Chris, you know, I talked to you. How long have I been saying I don't believe the Dodgers are going to make the World Series again? We have been telling you that all year.
Right.
And the reason was they never fixed the bullpen. I didn't have confidence. I told people it was hard to make it 3 years in a row when you haven't won. It hasn't happened since the 40s in Major League Baseball.
I didn't know that until today.
Since the 40s.
I would have changed my pick.
When the Yankees won and went 3 years in a row, they won. They won all 3 years.
Right.
So I was like, that's a hard thing for it to happen. Didn't love the bullpen at the trade deadline. They did nothing. Chris, they did nothing. And it came out. It came back to bite him. When you script out this game and you say Clayton Kershaw's pitching no matter what, he's the second guy out of the pen, I got a problem with that.
That doesn't sound like a managerial decision to me.
No, it could be from the
front
office.
Especially not from an old school player. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, but nowadays, in order to stick around, sometimes you got to bite your tongue and do what they want you to do. My only thing is, if things work out, he gets the credit. So things didn't work out.
I totally agree. He might just be a puppet on the string.
He might be.
But I agree. Like, he's going to be the one to take the blame.
Yep.
Because he's the one that's going to get the credit if they win.
He's out front.
Yep.
And that's what
people
see.
There's no doubt about it.
We don't see the general manager going out there to make a pitching change, do we?
Right. No, you're right. You are absolutely right. You know, so we agree. I don't think he deserves to be fired, but I think you got to make a change. I'm sorry.
You got to.
And the players, I don't need to change that many of the players. Like you said, you got to bolster the bullpen. But that lineup, do I need to really make that many changes to the lineup?
No.
And I got Buehler now, who I know is now a proven ace.
Yep.
Kershaw come back and be, you know, pretty good.
He could be a third starter now. Right. He's a third starter, which is fine. And he'll be a damn good third starter.
Yep. So it's got to be the manager. It's just as simple as that. I just can't imagine going through a whole season with the same situation and thinking people are going to be excited and think something different is going to happen.
Thanks for listening to the best of the Odd Couple podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern, 4 to 7 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Odd Couple at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.